Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, September 8th, 2020. Let's begin with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, Champaign Central High School Gift, Band Donation, Unprecedented, Wolf Family's $25,000 gift to be delivered Thursday. This article is by written by Anthony Zillis, and is based out of Champaign. When she was forwarded an unspecific voicemail earlier this summer from a man asking to speak with one of the Champaign Central Marching Band directors, Jennifer Curry didn't make special note of the name of the caller, Ted Wolf. It was one of those calls that was like, should I return it or not, Curry said. If she had noticed the last name, she might have remembered that she'd seen Wolf, W-O-L-F, scattered about the plaques of award winners on the walls of the small, dingy band room at the high school. The call was a meaningful one for Ted and his three brothers. Band, after all, was the through line for their family. Their parents, Robert and Barbara, grew up playing trumpet and cornet. Like their grandfather, three of the brothers played trombone and the other played the drums. He was a maverick, Ted, the youngest of the four, said with a laugh. While the four had different interests, band was one thing they all had in common, and that meant Barbara, a highly involved stay-at-home mother, was a constant around the Central Band program from 1969 to 1981. She helped out a lot in band and fed a lot of kids, Ted said. She was a second mom to a lot of guys in the band. Nobody ever left my mom's house hungry, that's for sure. Robert worked constantly as a doctor at Carl Foundation Hospital, but he still made it to most of his son's performances, Ted said. After their sons graduated, Barbara and Robert didn't forget about the Central Band. Each year, they enjoyed attending the school's jazz festival. When they died, Robert in 2015 and Barbara in May of this year, they asked that members of the Central Band play at their funerals. In their estate, they asked that their sons make some sort of donation, but they weren't specific on where they wanted it to go. For the brothers, the destination was clear. The one common thread that all four of us brothers had was the Champaign Central Marching Band, Ted said. When he first spoke with Curry, he simply told her the family wanted to make a memorial contribution for their mother. They didn't tell her an amount. A few weeks later, she was notified the band would receive $25,000, a number that floored her and her husband, fellow Central director John Curry, and their last name is spelled C-U-R-R-E-Y. It was pretty unprecedented, she said. Ted Wolf will officially present the money to the Currys on Thursday. The Currys don't know what specifically the money will be used for. While the Wolves aren't specifying what area they'd like it to be spent on, they may use it toward paying for special guests at their jazz festival or to start an endowment. Jennifer Curry is impressed that nearly four decades after the youngest Wolf brother graduated, the Central Band means so much to them. The sheer amount is incredible, but the emotional sentiment, we hear back from a lot of families about what Champaign Central Band means to them, she said. We see the impact in the kids. But when one says, thank you, it always means a lot. It's validating that that kind of work with kids is creating really important emotional ties with other students. The next headline reads, News Gazette Special, A Fall Without Football. On what was supposed to be college football's opening week, Memorial Stadium sat empty. The Big Ten's decision to wait until spring not only affects players, coaches and fans, but also community members with emotional and financial ties to the sport. Continuing from the weekend, here are more of their stories. The Fundraisers, another article written by Anthony Zillis and based out of Champaign. When encouraging families to join him and fellow Holy Cross parent-teacher club members to sell programs at Illinois football games, the pitch is simple for Aaron Hartnett. For kids who haven't been to a football game, it's a great experience, Hartnett said. You come work for an hour and a half, you miss out on the first quarter, and then we have seats in the stadium where you can go sit. Of course, there's a job to do, hawking programs throughout the stadium. In the last 3 years, Hartnett has learned the tricks of the trade, and he knows which days will be good for business, like games against Wisconsin and Iowa, and which will be less so, like a date with Western Kentucky. Anywhere from 6 to 20 families show up on game day with students from preschool through 8th grade. When they're done, they are allowed to find an open seat inside the stadium. During the colder games toward the end of the season, when the group gathers beneath the horseshoe, they're allowed to go on the field before the players arrive. While it's technically work that helps pay for Holy Cross's athletic department, Hartnett doesn't want it to feel like that. He uses it as a way to expose his children and others to new things. Kids develop socially as they're forced to interact and convince fans to buy their product. He also tries to use it as an opportunity to help the shy ones break out of their shell. "I don't want the kids to be like, 'I'm actually working,'" Hartnett said. "They are, yes, but I want these kids to have fun." For Hartnett and his third-grade son, Michael, this year will be a break from tradition. "This will be our first season missing any sports in about 5 years," he said. "Like so many others, those experiences will be wiped away this year, never to be replaced." "The school has hogged programs for almost 30 years," Hartnett said. "They're paid a flat fee, but the experience is about more than the money." "It's just a fun thing," Hartnett said. "I know a lot of the kids, including my boy, are going to miss it this year." And there are one picture in the paper. And it says, Aaron, here it is. Aaron Hartnett stands outside Memorial Stadium where the students of Holy Cross School would normally spend fall Saturdays hawking programs. And it's a man wearing kind of a t-shirt and jeans and some boots and a baseball cap. And he's standing right outside the stadium. The next headline reads, Broomcorn Festival. Arcola planning drive-in fireworks. This article is written by Deborah Pressey and is based out of Arcola. The summer of canceled July 4th fireworks and festivals will soon come to a close, but what about some fireworks in September? Arcola has scheduled a free drive-in fireworks display for Saturday, the same weekend the famous Arcola Broomcorn Festival would have been held had it not been canceled due to the pandemic. The fireworks show will be held at the Best Western Plus Green Mill Village Hotel and Suites starting at 8:30 p.m. Plans call for spectators in parking spots to be spaced well away from each other. City Administrator Bill Wagner said there will be on-street parking for the first 150 vehicles to arrive, and spots will be marked off at 30-foot intervals, enough space for a vehicle to be parked and people in each one to sit in lawn chairs in their own spaces without being near people in other parking spots. Parking will begin at 7 p.m. For those who don't get a space, the fireworks should be visible from quite a distance because this will be an all-aerial display, Wagner said. As long as somebody is on the east side of town, they should be able to see it, he said. Arcola's July 4th fireworks display had actually been rescheduled for the weekend of the Broomcorn Festival, which was to celebrate its 50th anniversary this year, Wagner said. "With so little for everyone to do this summer, and now no football either," he said, "we decided to keep the fireworks." The fireworks will be launched at the south end of the Green Mill Village property, and it will be about a 20-minute show, Wagner said. Visitors planning to come from outside Arcola should take the Arcola exit off Interstate 57. Police will be directing traffic, he said. People are also encouraged to choose viewing spots out in the countryside. There won't be any other activities with the fireworks, Wagner said. We may have a lemon shake-up stand on site, he said. We're trying to get that coordinated. The fireworks show is being funded through private donations, Wagner said. The next headline reads, Restore Illinois Phase 4, Day 75 by the numbers. The number of recovered cases in Champaign County rose by 463 from Sunday to Monday, presumably from U of I students recovering after testing positive last month for COVID-19. The new totals? 2,361 recovered, 492 active. In Illinois, there have been a total of 250,961 cases. That's up 1,381. And there have been 8,179 deaths. That's up 8. The updated active case totals in CU's 5 zip codes are 61820, Champaign, 363 cases. And then it says negative 272. Out of zip code 61801, Urbana, 43 and minus 51. I guess that's, I'm not sure what that indicates, I'm sorry. 61821, Champaign, 16 cases. 61822, Champaign, 13 cases. 61802, Urbana, 11 cases. And out of Champaign County, a total, I believe, of 2,873 cases. That's up 67. Of 12,886 new tests in Champaign County, 67 came back positive, a rate of 0.5%. The 7-day positivity rate dropped from 0.8% to 0.7%, while the number of residents hospitalized remained at 3 for the third straight day. Douglas County has 242 cases, Ford has 103. 2 days after Muhammad Seymour families learned that a Lincoln Trail teacher and Middletown Prairie student tested positive, Cerro Gordo High announced it was going all remote, following 7 positive tests. Piatt County has 103 cases, Vermilion has 371 cases. With 1,381 new positive tests, Illinois became the 6th state to surpass 250,000 cases. California, Texas, and Florida have all more than doubled that number. New York and Georgia also have topped it. The next headline reads, top of the morning. Something to get you going today, courtesy of staff writer Anthony Zillis. The Urbana Rotary Club's Peace Building Committee knew it was time to act this summer when Black Lives Matter marches swept across the county and thousands gathered in the streets of Champaign-Urbana. It placed a real emphasis on the haves and have-nots, said Barbara Jones, the leader of the Peace Building Committee. So we looked deeply at our own have and have-not situation in Urbana. Joan said her committee took to heart a statement on racism by Rotary International this summer that Rotary clubs need to listen, we need to learn, and we need to act. During an online meeting, Sam Smith, Director of Civic Engagement and Social Practice at Granert Center for the Performing Arts, suggested they set their focus on the Silverwood neighborhood, where an organization called Silver Hearts recently began delivering food and care packages to residents. This summer, Jones and the Urbana Rotary formed a partnership with Silver Hearts, led by Silverwood resident Giovanna Di Benedetto, that they hope lasts for years to come and creates a prototype for other Rotary clubs. Silver Hearts already has a close relationship with Quest Church. Rotary's involvement began with care packages last month that included coupons for students to get a free scoop of ice cream to celebrate the start of school, but they hope to go much further. They want to set up a way to help students with homework and collaborate with the Urbana Park District, which is led by Rotary Club President Tim Bartlett, to hold neighborhood events at Crestview Park to closely tie it to the neighborhood. They're working with the Urbana Free Library to donate books, and they also hope at some point to help residents advocate for housing rights. We want to create a model that looks like a sustainable community, Joan said. We want to go beyond traditional service. In addition to giving, we want to collaborate, to create something that looks like empowerment. The next headline reads, history. Area history. In 1920, two girls, ages 13 and 14, said they were kidnapped and held prisoner for 2 nights and a day at a farmhouse 2.5 miles northeast of Urbana. 2 men were arrested in connection with the accusation, 24-year-old Harmon Corey and 19-year-old Kenneth Routon. In 1970, Plans for remodeling and expanding the Champaign County Jail have gone down the drain, County Board Chairman C. Von Rauten said, because they did not meet vague state specifications. The county board had planned a $150,000 project, $990,000 in today's dollars, to add to the jail, or sorry, that's 990, yes, thousand, okay, in today's dollars, to add to the jail and convert to the sheriff's residence at the facility to more jail space. Rauten said Sheriff Russell Cheney would be the last sheriff to live in the home in downtown Urbana. In 2005, the director of the American Indian Studies Program at the University of Illinois chided U of I trustees for failing to make progress toward retiring Chief Illiniwek. Wanda Pillow, who first addressed the board a year previous, said board resolutions promised to consult with American Indians on the issue, but none of the trustees had contacted her program or the Native American House for input. "We are your American Indian representatives on this campus. You should be talking with us," she said. In international history, today's highlight. On September 8, 1974, President Gerald R. Ford granted a full, free, and absolute pardon to former President Richard Nixon, covering his entire term in office. Also on this date, in 1565, a Spanish expedition established the first permanent European settlement in North America at what is now known as St. Augustine, Florida. In 1664, the Dutch surrendered New Amsterdam to the British, who renamed it New York. In 1892, an early version of the Pledge of Allegiance, written by Francis Bellamy, appeared in the Youth's Companion. It went, "I pledge allegiance to my flag and the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all." In 1935, Senator Huey P. Long, a Louisiana Democrat, was shot and mortally wounded inside the Louisiana state capitol. He died 2 days later. The assailant was identified as Dr. Carl Weiss, who was gunned down by Long's bodyguards. In 1941, the 900-day siege of Leningrad, excuse me, this is a different one, in 1941. The 900-day siege of Leningrad by German forces began during World War II. And in 1943, during World War II, General Dwight D. Eisenhower announced Italy's surrender. Nazi Germany denounced Italy's decision as a cowardly act. The next headline reads, "Coronavirus pandemic, summer of COVID-19 ends with health officials concerned." This article is written by Jeffrey Collins and is written by the Associated Press. The lost summer of 2020 drew to a close Monday with many big Labor Day gatherings canceled across the U.S. and health authorities pleading with people to keep their distance from others so as not to cause another coronavirus surge like the one that followed Memorial Day. Downtown Atlanta was quiet as the 85,000 or so people who come dressed as their favorite superheroes or sci-fi characters for the annual Dragon Con convention met online instead. Huge football stadiums at places like Ohio State and the University of Texas sat empty. Many Labor Day parades marking the unofficial end of summer were called off, and masks were usually required at the few that went on. Please, please do not make the same mistakes we all made on Memorial Day weekend. Wear your masks, watch your distance, and wash your hands, said Dr. Raul Pino, state health director in Orange County, Florida, which includes Orlando. The U.S. had about 1.6 million confirmed COVID-19 cases around Memorial Day before backyard parties and other gatherings contributed to a summertime surge. It now has more than 6.2 million cases, according to the count kept by Johns Hopkins University. Deaths from the virus more than doubled over the summer to nearly 190,000. In New Orleans, which had one of the largest outbreaks outside of New York City this spring, city officials reminded residents that COVID-19 doesn't take a holiday after they received 36 calls about large gatherings and 46 calls about businesses not following safety rules Friday and Saturday. This is not who we are, and this is not how we, as a community, get back to where we want to be, the city said. In South Carolina, which was a hot spot of contagion over the summer before cases started to decline in early August, 8,000 fans, including Governor Henry McMaster, were allowed to attend the NASCAR race at the Darlington Raceway on Sunday. State officials approved a socially distant attendance plan at the track, which can hold 47,000 people. It was the biggest gathering in the state since the outbreak started 6 months ago. Many rows and seats were kept empty to keep groups of fans apart, and people were asked to wear masks. Debbie Katsanos drove down from New Hampshire with her husband, her father, and a friend. It was their first trip out of state since COVID-19 started spreading. They had time off because the Labor Day weekend fair, where they typically sell concessions, canceled this year. Katsanos, I think that's how you say it, said they wore masks at all times when they were away from their RV, ate in a restaurant only once on the way down, and tried to stay socially distant when visiting with other people at their campground. It's probably our only chance to get somewhere before the summer ends, Katsanos said Monday as she sat in traffic on Interstate 95 in North Carolina. I saw it as the turning of the corner. We survived this. Let's live life a little. The next headline reads, Election 2020. Working their angles, Trump-Biden spar over economy, jobs during Labor Day blitz. This article is written by Noreen Nasir, Alexandra Jaffe, and Kathleen Ronayne for the Associated Press. Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden and President Donald Trump spent Monday diminishing each other's credentials on the economy and understanding of the American worker as the presidential campaign entered its final post-Labor Day stretch. While workers live by an American code, Biden said Trump lives by a code of lies, greed, and selfishness as he met with labor leaders in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, a key swing state. Trump, meanwhile, tried to put the halting economic recovery under the best light in a White House press conference where he said Biden and his running mate, California Senator Kamala Harris, would destroy this country and would destroy this economy. Labor Day typically marks the unofficial start to the fall campaign season as candidates accelerate their activity for the final sprint to Election Day. Both campaigns reflected that urgency Monday as Harris and Vice President Mike Pence each campaigned in Wisconsin, a state Trump narrowly won in 2016. The events played out against the background of the pandemic, which has upended campaigning and pushed Biden and Harris in particular to conduct much of the traditional election activity online. While the health of the American economy and status of workers were dominant Labor Day themes, both campaigns also focused on recent protests that have roiled Wisconsin and the rest of the nation after police shot Jacob Blake, a black man in Kenosha last month. Harris, the first black woman on a major party presidential ticket, met privately with Blake's family at the Milwaukee airport after arriving in the state, where she spoke with Blake by phone from his hospital bed. Harris told Blake she was proud of him and individually spoke to each of his family members, in person and on the phone, urging them to take care of their physical and mental health, Blake's lawyers said in a statement. Biden met with Blake's family during a visit to Wisconsin last week. Trump did not during a trip of his own, instead meeting with law enforcement and business owners whose property had been damaged during protests. Nor did Pence, who touched on the protests during a speech in La Crosse, where he toured an energy facility. We will have law and order in every city in this county for every American of every race and creed, Pence said. Out on the trail, signs of the pandemic were evident. While Pence didn't speak with a mask on, workers from the power company he toured did as they stood behind him. Harris was careful not to stray far from blue X marks taped on the floor to encourage social distancing as she toured an International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers training facility. While supporters gathered outside the candidate stops, they had minimal interaction with members of the public beyond the people invited to their events. After meeting with Black business owners, Harris greeted a crowd of about 50 supporters outside as she left, removing her mask briefly while telling them, "We have to get this done. I need your help in Milwaukee." She noted in-person absentee voting begins in the state on October 20th, which is her birthday. Harris also met with Black business owners in Milwaukee, where she said her day of campaigning was focused on the dignity of work and the dignity of human beings. Biden spoke to a small group of labor leaders in a backyard in Lancaster, where he criticized Trump for refusing to deal with the problems that affect ordinary people and called for strengthening unions. His campaign announced endorsements from the Laborers International Union of North America, the International Union of Elevator Constructors, and the National Federation of Federal Employees, collectively representing hundreds of thousands of union workers nationwide. Later, at an AFL-CIO virtual town hall with Union President Richard Trumka, Biden called Trump's alleged remarks about fallen soldiers being losers and suckers un-American and said Trump would never understand why Americans serve. Trump has denied the remarks. "He'll never understand you. He'll never understand us. He'll never understand our cops, our firefighters, because he's not made of the same stuff," Biden said. Earlier in the day, Trump painted Biden as a leader incapable of handling the coronavirus and reviving the economy and pledged his own undying loyalty to the American worker. He boasted of adding more than 10 million jobs since May, without mentioning that's only about half of the jobs lost since the pandemic began. He also said the unemployment rate plunged to 8.4%. It was a sharper decline than many economists expected from the prior month, but they broadly view the latest report as evidence that further economic improvement will be sluggish. He alleged Biden and Democrats would immediately collapse the economy. The day marked Harris's first solo foray onto the campaign trail for in-person events since she became Biden's running mate nearly a month ago. Biden himself has stepped up his campaigning over the past week, traveling to Pittsburgh and Kenosha and holding two news conferences. Aides say to expect both Biden and Harris to increase their campaigning for the remaining weeks. Polls consistently show the economy as an issue at the top of voters' minds. The economy, once Trump's biggest asset for re-election, has now become a potential liability brought down by the coronavirus. Biden said Trump has had an inadequate response to the pandemic, resulting in more loss of life and jobs than necessary. The U.S. economy has been steadily rebounding from its epic collapse in the spring as many businesses have reopened and rehired some laid-off employees. Yet the recovery is far from complete. Only about half the 22 million jobs that vanished in the pandemic have been recovered. Economic inequalities also appear to have widened, with lower income and minority workers suffering disproportionately, while affluent Americans have lost fewer jobs and even benefited from rising stock and home prices. And there's a nice photo in the picture of kind of statues of just the heads of Biden and Trump. And here's the caption. A man takes a selfie with two large foam sculptures of Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden and President Donald Trump that a company that makes them stationed along Dixie Highway on Monday in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And that picture is provided by Joe Cavaretta from South Florida Sun Sentinel, TNS. So whatever you do, please remember to vote. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, September 8th, 2020. I'll be back shortly to read part two of the News Gazette with you, so please stay with me. Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful day.